Welcome to another installment of Talk at 10, your weekday morning talk show here on KRTS, Marfa Public Radio. I'm Tom Michael, and I'll be your host for this episode. Well, in case you're a KArts listener that doesn't know Jack, today you will. We're talking about Jack, Adventures in the Texas's Big Bend. It is a comic made here, jackcomics.com. It is set entirely in our region, and we have its creator with us today, Alpine artist Chris Ruggia. Hello, Chris.
Hi.
Well, Chris, it's good to have you here. For people that have been on your mailing list, they may know this, but it is called Jack, Adventures in the Big Bend. It centers around a black-tailed jackrabbit. You've done 42 episodes to date. This is an online comic. I do have in my hand a printed companion version to this web comic. When did this all begin?
Well, I started posting episodes in January of 2005 and was working on it for a little over a year before that in preliminary development work. But that's when I started posting episodes on the website.
And what gave you the idea of doing a comic, a web comic, based on a black-tailed jackrabbit?
For a lot of different reasons, I decided to start doing comics, and that would be a long story to get into that. But once I decided that that was something I maybe wanted to do, it was wide open. Where would I go? What kind of story would I want to do? And I was really active at the time in the Chamber of Commerce Board and in my design business working for tourism-oriented promotions of the area. And so I was really aware of interpretation of the area as a key part of tourism, just in this other part of my life. And so I realized that this would be a novel way to interpret the natural history of the area. And that's where it started. But then it's becoming a much more, you know, of a humanities sense. And now my priority is telling a story that's compelling to me and this hopefully to other people.
Well, here's a comic book that combines the flora and fauna of the Big Bend, as well as adventure and talking animals. So,
right.
It's a great combination. Well, let's talk about the characters. Jack is the rabbit, the jackrabbit. Mel is the kangaroo rat. He's kind of the, little character who's the worrywart.
Well, part of where that came from would reveal something about the process that I worked in, which was to research and get as solid information as I could get on each species I was going to deal with about where do they live, where do they occur, what do they eat, how long do they live, who eats them. That was critical to me, that nobody who would eat another person could be friends with that person. You know, that was the cardinal rule, that sort of thing. And so I did that research and tried to let the characterizations arise out of the actual data. And so with the kangaroo rat, I found that the small rodent is the biomass that drives the animal ecosystem there. Everybody lives off of the small rodent. All the predators eat small rodents. They might eat other things too, but just about everybody eats them. And so I thought, well, how would that affect a character? And so the first thing that came to mind was, well, a persecution complex. And so he would be a conspiracy theorist, and it just kind of went from there.
Conspiracy theories are nothing new in the Big Bend, but but Mel, the kangaroo rat, certainly paranoid, as you said, toward the bottom of the food chain in our area. Well, we're talking about comics and cartoons, folks, but the science is good. Our guest is Alpine artist.
Well, they took some honey.
Carl Perkins just jumped into our conversation. Still adjusting to life without Drew. This is Talk at 10 on Marfa Public Radio. Our guest is Alpine artist Chris Ruggia. You may know him from Vast Graphics, his design firm in Alpine, a creator of many area websites, very civic-minded, serves on many boards, including Alpine Public Library in the past, involved in the Alpine Chamber of Commerce. You may also know artist Ellen Ruggia. Chris got his degree at BFA degree in painting in Austin at the University of Texas in Austin. You moved out here in the mid-90s?
Yeah, in late 94.
Okay.
We came out. Ellen was going to take some biology classes at Sol Ross and then just stayed.
Now, do you sometimes consult with your wife, Ellen, for science information?
More for the read. You know, as she reads over every episode before I post it, and often find that I really need her to read it before I draw anything, because she'll often have a comment that and I'll make a change that if she suggests it early enough, I'll redraw as needed, you know, in the sketching process. But
isn't that ironic, though? You might say, well, a Kit Fox wouldn't do that, but Chris, a Kit Fox wouldn't talk.
Exactly. So yeah, accuracy is a loaded term, I guess, in this sense.
You can find the comics at jackcomics.com. And again, the cast of characters include Jack the Jackrabbit, his friend, the paranoid young kangaroo rat Mel. And early in their adventures, they meet a Kit Fox. Does he have a name?
No, it's just a Kit Fox.
And a Kit Fox is a natural predator to the rat. Actually prefers the rat to the rabbit.
That's what I have read. And that came from Mammals of Texas. I'm going to forget his last name. But anyway, it came from a particular book and indicated to me in my reading that they prefer the kangaroo rat so strongly that the range of the Kit Fox is determined by the occurrence of the kangaroo rat. So I was like, well, there's an obvious connection. I've got to bring these characters together in my story.
I remember early in the installments, there was a conversation where the rabbit was kind of defending the tasty qualities of himself to the Kit Fox. You know, he felt a little bit spurned since the Kit Fox really wanted to eat Mel, the kangaroo rat.
Predation is a major feature in the life of these herbivores, you know, these rodents, the rat and the rabbit. And so that is a prominent area of their characters, where Mel is the kangaroo rat is defensive. I decided that, well, Jack's relationship to predation might be different. He has he can run, for one thing. He can run fast. So I was thinking, well, maybe he would use that as a source of pride, rather than a source of resentment, that he'll put up a good chase, and in the end, he'll make a good meal. And that would be, in some ways, the culmination of his life.
These characters live in the Chihuahuan Desert. It really, truly is eat or be eaten. Nature red in tooth and nail, but Chris, these are black and white comics. What do they call these, panel comics, the ones online?
I'm not sure what you would say. It is a web comic in that it occurs on the web.
It's a single page. Your episode is a single page on the web, right?
And that's kind of unusual for a web comic. The most popular format is more like a daily newspaper strip. That'd be a single tier, single row of three or four panels with a gag at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not happy telling stories that way, and I prefer something I can chew on in terms of an amount of narrative. So I've got a really dense page that I put up each month, relatively speaking. So there'll be 12 to 16, 17 panels, which is a lot for one installment of a web comic.
This is your morning interview show on Marfa Public Radio. Our guest, Alpine artist Chris Ruggia. We're talking about his webcomic, Jack, Adventures in the Big Bend. We're talking about your comic also on the heels of a recent exhibit in Austin. You attended the independent media exposition known as Staple, and you showcased Jack there. What was that experience like? And when was that, first of all?
That was the first weekend in March. It was the 7th on Saturday. And I had attended the show once before, 3 years before, just as a visitor. I didn't have anything physical except a little postcard I handed around to a mm-hmm. few people. And so this was my first show. And this is a major part of the comics world, is conventions, where mm-hmm. artists go out and meet other artists and find their audience, that have a little table, put out their comics and any other materials they might have to sell.
So you've attended these.
Yeah.
Was there something called the Comic Con? Is that still an ongoing concern?
That's in San Diego, and it's immense. It's huge. Uh-huh. It's way too overwhelming for me at this point in my life.
Right.
But Staple, in comparison, is a very small show. It's two showrooms of tables of individual artists or very small publishers displaying their comics. And so what I did was I printed up a mini comic, which the definition of that is any comic that is essentially self-assembled. I had mine, you know, copied up at the local print shop and stapled together. So it's usually it's small, it's a folded sheet of 8.5 by 11 paper with a cardstock cover stapled.
I'm holding it in my hand. It's a spinoff from Jack, and I suppose I should use the cartoon voice to describe the title. Night of the Grasshopper Mouse.
For more gripping desert adventures, visit jackcomics.com.
So, yeah, experience the shocking thrills of 100% true life nature. So, sorry about that.
No, no. It looks scary on the front, but I'm not scary at heart, so I pull the rug on the scariness pretty fast. But
our guest is Chris Ruggia. We're talking about Jack, Adventures in the Texas' Big Bend here on Marfa Public Radio. So you went to the Staple, the Independent Media Exposition, and I should ask, I said a bit before, you got a BFA at the University of Texas in Austin in fine arts and painting. Did you do comic work in college?
Not at all.
No.
No. It was my dream as a child mm-hmm. to do comics, but mixed with animation, I was dreaming of that as well. But then when I got to college, I was in that curriculum and in that world, and I just grew up and decided, oh, that was, right. I was going to do this instead. And so I did painting, printmaking. A lot of my work had a cartoonish bent to it just because that's the way I tend to draw. But no, I was, and in the years since then, I would skirt around it, but never really got that narrative piece, that storytelling part. A lot of my drawings were cartoons, mm-hmm. but there wasn't a story. And so that was took me years before I actually was able to put it all together and tell a story.
Well, tell us about the industry itself. I mean, from kind of a bird's eye view of the industry, it seems like superhero comics are still a big staple of the business, as well as Japanese animation.
Yeah, those are in the comic book shops and things like that. The comic book, the little pamphlet, that is dominated by Marvel and DC, the big superhero publishers. The manga are much stronger in the bookstore market, though if you go, say, to one of the stores in Midland, say, one of the bookstores there, you'll see 90% of the non-Japanese comics are going to be superhero collections in paperback. Mm-hmm. But what's happened in my observation in the last 5 to 10 years is the amount of differing kinds of work has just exploded. There's a breadth of kinds of voices, and not only different genres, but things that aren't genres at all, things just kinds of personal storytelling that's so exciting to me. There's the breadth of work that's available right now to read in comics form.
What are some examples of that?
Well, one publisher that's particularly exciting that only publishes in the book market is First Second. Is they're a book publishing company that one of my favorites was Gene Yang's American Born Chinese, which is just an amazing graphic novel that was done in mini comics like mine. It was serialized before it was collected into the color version in, you know, a perfect bound paperback.
What is that about? Is it like a Harvey Picard type?
No, it's not. It has three different tracks of the story that it tells simultaneously. And one, the one that gripped me, is The Monkey King, which is a traditional, it's a novel actually from, I think, the 14th or 15th century in China. Mm-hmm. And it's a very popularly retold story in Chinese culture. And so he takes that as a central part. And then there's a semi or strongly autobiographical story of the author, or the author's alter ego, as a child of being of Chinese parents but born in the United States, and his relationship to the children who aren't Chinese, you know, the more broadly assimilated, let's say, children, and then his relationship to more recent Chinese immigrant children, and his kind of resentment at being associated with them. He's normal, you know, and that sort of thing. So there's those kind of issues. And then there's the third track, which is a sitcom is the way it's presented, and it's a broadly offensive Chinese caricature character. And so he tells that plays in this sitcom. And he tells these three stories in parallel and then kind of ties them together at the end in, I think, really organic and satisfying way.
Who reads these? Adults?
Yeah, adults read, I would say, would be the most of the readership of First Second publishers would be adults.
How about your work, Jack? Who reads Jack?
You know, I'm not sure. most of the people that I hear from are adults, but a lot of them are telling me that they're reading them with and to their kids. It is important to me, my mission here, in a way, of, you know, interpreting the natural history. It's important that it be accessible to everybody. And so I'm telling stories that, yeah, I mean, people are characters. They aren't people. They're animals. There's this threat of them being killed. And some of them maybe off screen are actually getting killed, but there's nothing graphic going on that I'm not comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. So my mini comic I gave to a friend of mine when he was visiting the area, and he just sent me an email that he read it with his six-year-old, and the kid loved it and now mm-hmm. wanted to go read them online. So that's great.
Yeah,
that's great. It seems to be a mix.
Our guest is Chris Ruggia. He's here talking about Jack, Adventures of Texas's Big Bend, set here in the Chihuahuan Desert, and including a cast of characters we know well, jackrabbits and kangaroo rats and others. You may have seen Chris's name recently featured in one of the top-selling magazines in the country, Southern Living. Taylor Bruce, a visitor to this area, did a look at the three railroad towns, Marfa, Alpine, and Marathon, and focused on an artist in each, and he picked you for Alpine. Well-deserved.
Well, thank you.
Have you gotten a lot of, hits or referrals from that Southern Living piece and the companion CNN piece?
Well, the CNN piece, oddly enough, it didn't include my web address in the online write-up. So I don't check my statistics on my website all mm-hmm. that frequently. I didn't see a major jump, but I did get a couple of emails through my website of people telling me that they had seen the article and been to the website and liked the comic. And that, to me, says if two people actually wrote, I don't get a lot of... You know, the number of people who actually write me as opposed to the number who visit is very small. So that says to me it's significant. Whether it's a huge amount, I don't. Mm-hmm. I really don't know.
There's a real effortlessness to your style, and from what little I know about comics, the shading and the action is so well done.
Thank
and
you.
Also the paneling, where you can create a scene of dream sequence or. There's this one scene where they're burrowing underground with the kangaroo rat kind of dragging the rabbit behind him, and the shading on all the panels or the borders are all underground scene. It gives you the presence of an underground scene. And we're about to go in the latest issue into a flashback sequence, I'm not quite sure where it's going at the moment. But Jack, the main character, has real squarish quality. You know, when you give these anthropomorphic characters... When you give them those qualities, do you try to exaggerate their present qualities in some way, or
I do I
or to
I,
differentiate them, because sometimes you could see little oval shaped characters fighting each other and not sure which is the rat and which is the coyote and which is the fox, right?
Well, there was a fight between two kangaroo rats where Mel inadvertently violated the burrow of another rat, thinking it was a deserted one. And that other kangaroo rat, I made him really, his head really boxy, because Mel's head is like an egg mm-hmm. shape. But my approach is to do image searches, you know, do some photo reference research for whatever animal I'm looking at. And then I do a bunch of drawings. And see, my approach now is more sophisticated than when I started. So my main characters, Mel and Jack, they developed in the level of drawing I was capable of at the time I started, and I've gotten a lot better. And so I think if I was actually creating them now, they'd probably look a lot different. Because Mel's shape, really, his head is really like an egg, kind of, with a little line for a nose on it.
And Jack has got this squarish quality with the big floppy ears.
And a giant eyeball on the side of his head, which evolved. The way his head looks, it's very comfortable for me to draw, but it just sort of shifted into that over 3-4 years of drawing him.
We haven't talked about the big villain or the big danger, the coyotes, who are often in a background dark shadow. The coyotes, it's kind of a buddy team. There's the smart one and the dumb one. Claude and Jake?
Claude and Jake. Yeah, they coyotes do hunt sometimes in family groups, and the idea was that Jake is a younger coyote that... usually it's a parent child until the juvenile coyote is mature enough to go find their own territory. They might hunt together. Where in this case, I'm imagining it's an uncle-nephew relationship, because they really aren't. father, son. Mm.
There's something, well, let me, we mentioned a moment ago about the superhero comics in the industry and about Japanese animation, and we'll get back to Japanese animation, but I wanted to close with the, I wanted to mention again the superhero comics, because in some ways, we were talking before the interview started, Chris, about the anything can happen in superhero comics, and we all can remember one of the Superman films where Lois Lane died and Superman just went so fast around the earth, he turned back time. That kind of blew the doors open on, well, geez, I mean, you can write any plot now, can't you? So anything can happen in superhero comics, and there's something about your comics where the behaviors of the animal have to be somewhat true to life.
Right. And, well, and I think any writer, you know, any storyteller is going to set parameters for what can and can't happen, and that's where fantasy comes from, you know, is that every world has its rules. And in this sense, you know, the rules I'm drawing from are what I can glean from the literature that's available to me.
So there is a suspension of disbelief, but within a certain frame here.
Right, because I want to mention on my little mini comic, I put a blurb to try and, you know, sell the book, saying experience the shocking thrills of 100% true life nature. But of course, that's untrue, because I'm distorting radically, you know, when just by having them be friends at all. And so on the inside cover, I put a little asterisk and saying actual true life content 15%, which is my guess, because
right.
Because I try and make it as true as possible. But then I put a little margin of error, plus and minus 12%, thinking that, you know, worst case, maybe I'll get 3% right.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we learned a lot from the comics. For example, the Earless Lizard, the way he aggressively postured against another lizard is they puffed up their...
Gosh, what? Dewlaps.
Dewlaps.
Yeah, their neck
pouches. And they did push-ups. And...
Yeah. Those particular lizards, they posture for territory.
So they were, these two lizards were fighting over territory, but at that moment in the comic... it was exactly how lizards would fight over territory.
Yeah, and similarly with the fight between the two kangaroo rats, I was lucky in that kangaroo rats, for some reason, are very heavily studied creatures. And mm-hmm. so a biologist friend gave me a book of all, this is from the Journal of the Society of Mammalogists, I believe, their journal, and it was a collection of all, this is the current state of the research on kangaroo rats, and there was an article describing they frequently fight over territory, but particularly over seeds, over seed caches. They hide their seeds and collect them, and then they steal from each other and fight constantly. And there was a description. These are the ways they fight. They jump up and down and kind of box at each other. They do a little leapfrogging for position. Mm-hmm. And so I was able then to just document, you know, make a list. These are the actions that they take when they fight, and then just draw those movements in my fight between the kangaroo rats.
But isn't that great? And I think it's a certain characteristic of the Big Bend, especially the scientists of Brewster County, where you would draw a cartoon and they would say, well, you know, you actually need to do this. They would actually have this type of behavior. I think that's wonderful out here, the many science-minded, nature-minded people. It reminds me of my wife, who did some bird drawings for the old Desert Mountain Times, and studied them and drew them. And then we had immediately had people say, well, actually the beak should be a centimeter smaller, and they're actually the wings. And just there's such great knowledge out here of the local natural environment that you would have those criticisms. It's not just a drawing.
And they, in particular, Dr. Scuddy at Sol Ross mm-hmm. was so helpful to me as I was starting out. He was the first person I sat down with saying, you know, tell me stuff. And it was that open, and I told him what I was doing, and he gave me a lot of great information about possible characters that I might want to use. And then John Cargis at the Nature Conservancy is the other one who's been excited about my project from day one, and he is actually the one who suggested the grasshopper mouse as a possible character, which is the main villain in my mini comic.
Alpine artist Chris Ruggia here in the studio. We are talking about Jack, jackcomics.com. Also, the mini companion printed piece called, the mini comic, a printed piece called Night of the Grasshopper Mouse. And here we are on KRTS, K-Rats, if you'd prefer. Also wanted to get back to the Japanese animation. Now, you hear about things as manga and a younger generation really involved in that, and you were talking about, are there different classifications, furries, and what does this all mean?
Oh, right. Well, you asked if my work would be called anthropomorphic.
Right.
And so, in strictly speaking, absolutely, because I'm anthropomorphizing these animals. They are talking in a language that we can understand. I'm giving them personality types based on my experience with other humans, and so I'm humanizing these animals. But there's a huge culture that I don't begin to understand of anthropomorphic comics, and a lot of them arise out of the Japanese styles, the manga comics, but many of them, perhaps the majority, are actually American comics, and a lot of them are on the web, and they have huge fan followings. This is more human bodies and with some hair, sort of like your traditional Walt Disney approach, like Robin Hood, you know?
There's
standing on two legs and gesturing as humans.
And they're called furries?
They're called furries. And I have the good fortune to most... when I look at the statistics on my website, I check the referring links to see if anyone's linked to me and thank them. And there's a furry, an anthropomorphic comic index, which is heavy on these kind of human with animal heads kind of stories. But I was listed on that several years ago and marked as a reader favorite. And so I get at least 100 unique, new visitors every month from just the massive enthusiasm about that genre, which is one that I don't even know what's going on there.
How do you draw for the web? Do you use a special tool, or do you just draw on paper and scan it?
My process for this comic is pretty involved, but it's on a piece of paper. I draw it in pencil, and then I ink it with a brush, and then I erase my pencil lines, but then I shade it, give a little texture with pencil, and I do ink wash on that, all on that piece of paper. And then I scan it in, and then in Photoshop, I do a little extra tone. I darken things up a little, and then I add the type in another program.
How often do these episodes come out?
I try for monthly. I'm hoping to do a little more frequently than monthly, but that's my goal. The Big Bang Gazette very generously printed my comic for about 3 years, and that... I am immensely grateful to that, because that external deadline kept me doing it. It's sometimes when it might not have made it through my life of hecticness at the time. But that set me on the monthly deadline, because they had a monthly schedule. And so I'm hoping to adhere to that, though I have other side things that I'm working on that sometimes bump an episode back a few weeks.
We've been speaking with Alpine area artist and graphic designer Chris Ruggia about Jack Comics. You can find them online at jackcomics.com. The cartooning is great, and the science is good as well. We've been talking about Jack Comics, and you can catch up with the Jackrabbit and the Kangaroo Rat and the Kit Fox and the Coyote. We're getting a little bit now in the latest episode, the background to the Jackrabbit, and it doesn't look like he grew up here in the Chihuahuan Desert.
That's true, and that was always the case, because I knew that since I'm introducing new animals to the reader, I needed a character that was new, that was learning about the area. Mm-hmm. And so we have a book on the ecology of the Texas coast, and so my wife and I have a history and a love for the Gulf Coast, and so I saw in that, well, there's black-tailed jackrabbits there too, so let's say somehow he is transported out here from the Gulf Coast, and so he's introduced to the desert with fresh eyes, and so that way he can be learning, and that's an excuse for me to tell people and give people information and introduce him, and thus the reader, mm-hmm. to the all these different animals. And so I'd hinted at it enough times that I realized that before this story's over, I've got to tell the story. How on earth did he get out here? And perhaps I'll stretch the bounds of plausibility. You tell me in the next few episodes, but it's an adventurous and gripping little tale of a couple of episodes of how he makes it out here.
Thanks again, Chris Ruggia, our guest on Talk at 10. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Tom.